Hi, and welcome to another CineStories podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dick. Recently, I sat down with indie producer Tanny Cohen, who has a film, No Pay Nudity, premiering this week in Los Angeles. Then, it'll be rolling out to more theaters throughout the month. Also, this Friday, Tanny will be doing a Q&A with the writer and the director and a couple of the film stars after the 7:30 showing at the Limley Inn Encino. For more details, go to limley.com. Currently, CineStory is accepting submissions for both its 2017 retreats. The extended and last deadline for the TV digital retreat is December 5th. The early deadline for the feature submissions is December 20th, with the final deadline in the first week of April. More information about CineStory and its retreats can be found at our website, www.cinestory.org. Now, on with the podcast.
29, I think it was built. And Malkovich has lived in here. When I moved in, Elizabeth Shue was my neighbor, and Bebe Neuwirth lived above.
Oh, really?
And a lot of people come and go. It's quiet, as you can see. It's a nice place.
You need to find somebody who knows the full history of the place and do it, you know, try to find it.
Yeah, some intuitive came here sometimes. It's like, oh, you know, so-and-so lived here in the 30s or 40s. I'm sure it was well, you know, in the days when there weren't a ton of buildings, there probably was a lot of people that lived here. But it's a really nice building.
Well, I always like to start off by sort of asking how or when you got the entertainment bug. You know, was it something that you always knew that you wanted to get into? Or was there a movie that you saw or a TV show that sort of inspired you to go after, you know?
You know, the truth is I don't really know, except for the fact that all the movies I grew up with during the 70s were movies of the 70s, you know, from anything Hal Ashby did, Harold and Maude, Shampoo, Being There, Coming Home. Then there were movies like Midnight Cowboy. I mean, they were just the most incredible films, and I think maybe that, but I don't really have a story like my mom dropped me off at the movie theater on Saturday at 8 in the morning and picked me up at 9 that night, and I had to do this. I just somehow ended up here and got lucky that I've been able to make movies.
Well, what was your first job?
My first job was actually for a television producer who had been a very, very prolific and successful television producer of variety. And then he went bankrupt. So when I went to work for him, he was trying to rebuild his company. So the first thing that I ever did was we did 24 half hours with Tom Jones in Vancouver, which was really a lot of fun because Tom was a great guy. So it was a music variety, but I really think my first, and then I did some odd jobs, but my first real job in film was I worked for Brian De Palma when he was in post-production on Scarface, and then I worked on Body Double and a little-known film called Wise Guys with Danny DeVito and Joe Piscopo.
Now, being with De Palma, how did that sort of influence your career? I mean, because you didn't stay in the thriller genre, but, you know, what did you take away from working under him?
Well, he was a fascinating guy to work for because he was so polarizing. You know, people either loved him or hated him, and it was like most women couldn't stand his movies, and men liked his films. But I think it just gave me, it was the first real insight I had, and not that I've worked in the studio system, because most of the films I produced have been outside that system, but it just gave me a lot of insight to how films were put together, and you know, Brian at the time had a lot of, He'd done a lot of movies back to back, so he really could make his movies without a lot of interference. Although when we made Wise Guys, he and the producer, I asked him if I could work with the producer on this film so that I could get that knowledge, because I was really interested. So I worked with the producer, and the first week of shooting, they had a falling out. So I ended up working for the producer. And, you know, if I left, I went down to Atlantic City because we shot down there for a couple weeks. And I went down for a week, and the producer was really pissed off at me. But I really worked for Brian. So, but it just, you know, it's a whole, that world is a much different world than the world that I ended up doing, because that world, you know, those budget, those movies had good budgets. They had, you know, I used to have a Teamster pick me up every day and bring me to set. And, you know, on an indie movie, those sort of things do not happen.
Well, he's also, he's, I think he, it's very interesting with his career, because he's a guy who at times is, has the label of a writer-director on some of his projects, and then other times he just directs a script that's passed along to him. And I'm sure his influences, you know, he influences the work once he gets it. But did that give you any insight in that, how to work with writers, or, you know, or sort of the difference between working with a writer, you know, directly, or somebody who is a writer-director?
Right. Well, Brian's a real visualist. So the script isn't necessarily as important to him as it happened when Body Double was already written. So that script was done. And when he did Wise Guys, that was not a project that he developed. He was going to direct this kid's film, this kid with a computer called Flight of the Navigator or something like that. Remember that?
Yeah.
And he decided at the last minute he couldn't do that. So Aaron Russo, who's the producer of Wise Guys, Aaron had done The Rose and Teachers. He brought Brian the script. It was basically, Brian called me up one day and said, because I had, Brian's base was in New York, but it so happened that the time I was working for him, he was working, we shot Body Double here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he was like, I'm not going to do Flight of the Navigator. I'm going to do Wise Guys. You need to find a place to live. We're shooting in New York, and we're leaving in 3 weeks. So in terms of just the whole development process, we never really went through that on the projects. It wasn't until my next job, I went to work for these. There was an older couple that had financed a film company with, and they partnered with some Australians, and they were very well known, their partners in Australia. So they got a lot of flack for having an American film company. So this couple here in the U.S., they bought them out. And when I went to work for them, they had a huge stable of projects that had been developed when someone else was running the company. So there, at this company, is where I really got more involved in the development side. And we ended up making this film, Chattahoochee, with Dennis Hopper and Gary Oldman. And just to circle back, because we'll get to No Pay Nudity, that's where I met the director of No Pay Nudity. He was an actor in that movie 20-plus years ago.
And so once you were with that company and you had sort of that, you know, that pile, like, you know, every producer has, how do you figure out which is the next one? Like, is it, do you just sort of get a feeling about it, or?
Well, yeah, in this case, you know, it's all about trying to attach talent. Mm-hmm. They were able to get, there was a company, the company that financed Chattahoochee was a company called Hemdale, who, Hemdale, I think, did the original Terminator. And it was this John Daly and this actor, David Hemmings. And so they saw the script. They got it to Gary Oldman. Once Gary came on board, they actually were so pleased. And Gary wasn't that well known then. He had done Sid and Nancy and Prick Up Your Ears, but he wasn't the caliber, obviously, he became. But they were so happy to have him, they let him okay the director. And we ended up working with this director, Mick Jackson, who's, you know, Mick went on to direct L.A. Story and The Bodyguard, many other things, Denial, which just came out.
I guess that's the thing when you're in the middle of development and you're trying to attach directors or actors about where the script needs to be before you even start doing that. I know they're never perfect, but where's your barometer on, like, okay, it's in a good enough place for us trying to get attachments, or sometimes is it just trying to, you know, pitch the idea, like, you know,
you mean
getting in a room with a director saying, look, it still needs work. And
yeah, I think you want to have the best script you can to take out there. I mean, the reason when I worked for this company, I brought them a number of projects that got set up at different places, and they never got made, but it was like, okay, we just set this up at Orion with Mike Medavoy. You're going to get an associate producer credit and $25,000 or whatever fee.
Yeah.
And it's like, we did all this work to find this, right? So maybe you should try and do this on your own. So, you know, in that case, at that company too, they had a whole, Stephen Bach, who was the executive in charge of Heaven's Gate, they hired him to run the company after the whole Heaven's Gate debacle. And he spent millions of dollars. They had a lot of money in developing, so they had really good projects and good scripts. The same writer of Chattahoochee had also written the script called The Morning After that Jane Fonda and Jeff Bridges did.
All right.
So it was really working at this company that propelled me to try and go out on my own. Because you do all this work, and then it's like, okay, maybe if it gets made, you know, you're going to get an associate producer credit and a small fee. So, you know, that was sort of my propensity of going, you know what, I'd like to try this on my own. So after I left that company, I was really fortunate because I found a gentleman who was a physical therapist in San Rafael, San Francisco, north of San Francisco, and he wanted to be in the film business. So he was willing to finance me for a year and cover all my expenses while I look for scripts. And I read every single thing I could get my hands on, not through the traditional routes, not through agents, but, you know, if I met you and I was having a conversation and you were a writer, I would ask you, can I read what you wrote? If your mother was a writer, I would ask you if I could read your mother's script. And after a year of reading, you know, hundreds of scripts, I read a script. And when I read it, when I finished it, I was like, oh, my God, we have to make this movie. And I called my partner in Northern California and said, I've read a script, we got to make. And that was April. And we were literally rolling cameras by July.
Wow. And what was which project was that?
It was a project called Inside Monkey Zetterlin. And Monkey Zetterlin was the lead character's name. And it was written and starred an actor named Steve Anton. It was one of these, you know, let's make a movie kind of, you know, let's go out in the barn and make a movie, because we didn't have a casting director. And just through our contacts and people we knew, it had Patricia Arquette, Sandra Bernhardt, Sofia Coppola, Tate Donovan, Rupert Everett, Ricky Lake, Martha Plimpton, Catherine Hellman, Debbie Mazar, just this amazing cast. Now, we put enough money in the bank every Friday to make payroll, so it's not really it's how you make a movie when you don't know any better.
Right.
And we just somehow got it done. It took us, you know, we ran out of money. And of course, we ran out of money in between Thanksgiving and New Year's, which was perfect. And we finished the film, and it actually was in competition. It had a really funny life because We tried to get in Sundance in 92 and we were turned down, but we didn't finish the film. We wouldn't have been done in time. And then ICM ended up representing it. And after premiering at Seattle and playing a bunch of festivals, including Toronto, at Toronto, our agent brought Jeff Gilmore, who was the head of Sundance at the time, to the screening. And he's like, I've already seen this film. I already turned it down. And our agent, Robert Newman, said, you've got to see it. They really pulled it together. And they came in 20 minutes late, watched the film, and walked out and walked right up to the director and my producing partner and said, we want you guys to be in Sundance. So it was just a complete fluke. And in the days where, you know, now I don't think you can play any festivals before Sundance, but we had played a bunch. And so we were in competition in 93.
Now, and through the years, how have you seen the way writers have been treated sort of adjust? Like, has there been an evolution through years, or is it still sort of there?
It's really, for me personally, if you don't have a good script, you don't have a movie. And, you know, I go to the movies a lot and walk out and go, did anybody read the script before they said, let's green light this? But really the reverence for writers, you know, having, you know, worked with Lisa Calamaro, who, you know, is obviously another CineStory board member, and watching her represent writers over the years and see that, you know, she has to fight to get them tickets to the premieres of their films, you know. And I personally think the writer is the most important person, because if it starts with the script, and if you don't have a good script, no matter what actors you put in those parts, you're not going to have a good movie. It's shown time and time again. So I think maybe at the independent level, you know, in the independent level, my job is to find those scripts, because I can't get a movie made if I don't have a good script. At the studio level, the development people from stories I've heard over the years, you know, they have to keep their job and they have to put their 2 cents into a script, or it's easier for them to say no so that they keep their job, or they have to put their mark on it. So you start getting all these different, you know, perspectives of what this script should be, right? When if you have a good script that gets to that level that a studio buys, you know, you would hope that the development process for the writer would be with a director or a star who sort of knows, you know, what perspective they want to bring to it, right?
Yeah.
But listen, I have been very fortunate. I've worked with one of my favorite writers I've worked with, you know, is an Oscar-nominated writer, wonderful guy. And, you know, he writes nonstop. And some of the stories I've heard, you know, they're kind of crazy.
So you're not tyrannical with the writers?
No, I have to, you know, I'm one of these people that and I don't read as much as I used to because I don't have the time to do it, but I'm one of these producers that I have so much respect for. I can't write. I've tried, can't do it. You know, wrote 5 of the worst pages you could ever read. I mean, I don't have that.
Where are those?
But, you know, I have so much respect for anybody who actually sits down and starts and you know, from page 1 to page 90 or 100, whatever it is, I always read a script all the way through, even when they're not good. I just feel that way about it. And I think, I don't know, I get that feeling from other producers that I know in the indie world that's the approach.
Well, so say, you know, you say you read them even if they're not good all the way through, but is there something that when you are reading it that catches you and or that keeps your interest? Or is, I mean,
yeah. Well, you read as many scripts as
good writing, like, but there's something more. There's got to be, you know.
Well, it's something that sings to you. Right. You know, I mean, there are a lot of movies out there that do really well. You know, it's all subjective, right? There's movies that people love that I don't respond. You know, I think for me, it's just, it's almost like going into a world where you don't even realize you're reading a script, you know, and you just keep turning the page and the next thing you know, you're done. And a lot of it is, I mean, it has to do with the writing because the better the writing, but, you know, writing scripts, telling stories in that fashion is hard to do. And it takes a lot of, you know, there's probably a handful of people just born with innate God-given talent, right? But then, you know, what's so great about CineStory is our writers are not typically just off the bus. They, you know, they're people that either have been writing for years or they have other professions and they've been writing on the side and they have more life experience. And you can see that in the writing and in the way they tell their stories, right?
Right. Well, what makes a bad script? Even if you're going to read something all the way through, there's got to be something that jumps out that's an automatic turnoff.
Well, it's a couple things. It's bad writing, it's bad storytelling, and you know, again, it's the, you know, it's just somebody that doesn't have a basic inherent understanding or the talent to execute it. And it's not so, I mean, you're a writer, you know, it's not so easy to execute it. And a lot of times it will be a great premise, right? But it's just not well told. It's not well thought out. And, you know, there's traditional three act structures, right? Where you have set up confrontation and resolution. And then, you know, I love, like, Inside Monkey Zetterlund, even No Pay Nudity, the film coming out Friday, they're just slices of life. There's not a structure, really. You sort of go into someone's life and you follow it for a period of time and maybe something changes, but there's not a huge, you know, obvious arc or so that happens. So I think with bad writing, you know, it's just a combination of a lot of things. Or a script that doesn't, you know, and I think maybe a script isn't, maybe I think the script is bad, but somebody else will read it and they think it's good. So again, it's whether it's 60 or
we've had enough of those conversations realize. Well, how did you come across No Pay Nudity? And that's No Pay, comma, Nudity.
Yeah, No Pay, comma, Nudity, which basically the title is taken from, you know, if you were an actor and you were looking in Backstage magazine and you were looking at an ad for an actor and it said, you know, looking for actors, looking for females, 25, you know, dancers, no pay, comma, nudity. And to go back to Chattahoochee, the director of the project is an old friend of mine named Lee Wilkoff. And Lee, this is his directorial debut. You know, Lee's in his mid-60s. He's
a huge character actor. I mean, yeah. if you know, everybody, I think, would recognize him when they'd see him.
Yeah, well, he also originated the role of Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors, which, you know, on off-Broadway, which was, a lot of people know him from that. But Lee has primarily made his career, most of his career has been Broadway. He's been nominated for a Tony. He's done, you know, he was on Ally McBeal. He's done, you know, he's done a lot of TV and film over the years, but really Broadway, I think, has been his main bread and butter.
I recognize him as being a judge from Law and Order.
Yeah, I'm sure, because everybody that lives in New York has been in Law and Order. And Lee actually developed the story. It's loosely based on his experience. And the premise of the movie is about Gabriel Byrne plays this actor who's had enough success to stay in the game, but he's miserable. And he hangs out every day at the Actors' Equity Lounge with this eclectic group of other actors who aren't acting, Nathan Lane, Francis Conroy, Boyd Gaines, and a young actor named John Michael Hill. So Lee, the impetus for the story happened because Lee has always, when I met him on Chattahoochee, he actually lived in L.A., but a short time after, he moved back to New York, and he's been in New York all these years. And he always lived in either Brooklyn or Connecticut. So when he would come in the city, he would use the Equity Lounge as a place to, you know, hang out in between auditions, or if he had to make a quick pit stop, you know, it was. So he went, you know, he'd go in there, and one day, 10 years later, he went in there, and the same group of people were sitting, you know, in the same seats they always sat in. So that sort of became this idea, and then he took the idea to another actor who's also a writer, a great writer named Ethan Sandler. And Ethan's now, he works primarily as a writer, although he's married to Catherine Hahn, and Catherine Hahn plays the rabbi in Transparent. So Ethan's got a small role every season on that. But he just sold a pilot, and he's been writing for years. So Ethan developed the idea with Lee, wrote the script, and then Lee tried to find a New York producer, and he couldn't find anyone. He just called me up one day and said, "Hey, I want to make this movie. We read the script," and the script was great. And a couple years later, we made the movie.
So did you fly out for New York for the production?
We shot in New York. Yeah, New York was great. I mean, when I worked for De Palma, we did Wise Guys in New York. And
that was, what, late 80s New York, right?
As opposed to now, right. But New York's my favorite city in the world. And it was always been a dream of mine to shoot a movie there. It's a completely different way to shoot a movie because it's very spread out. Now, this was an indie movie. We had a small presence. I would walk home from set, and I would walk, you know, four blocks and see four different, you know, trucks on each block for whatever big production. You know, there'd be a makeup trailer on one truck, on one block, and a block later you'd see the production vehicle or the honey wagon. We had a small presence, but it was...
Did you guys qualify for tax breaks?
Yeah,
tax credits?
Yeah, New York has great incentives. You get 30% on production and 35% on post. No above the line, but still, you know, it was enough. We had that rebate money gapped. So, you know, it was a good chunk of change for our budget.
Now, once you guys got into production, was there anything that changed during the script due to, losing a location or, because so many times we just talk about, oh, here's the script, and then it gets made. But sometimes stuff has to be adjusted on the fly because, you know, say a restaurant floods out or...
No, fortunately, I don't know, knock on wood, I've really been really lucky because... With independent filmmaking, it's pretty much you have your location, and if you don't finish your day there, there's no coming back. But, you know, with No Pay Nudity, we were in the first 7 or 8 days, we were in the Equity Lounge. So it's always, you're really fortunate when you have a location that you get that many days in. But, you know, the script was so good. I think that there were some tweaks while we were shooting, but for the most part, I would say we stuck to about 95% of Ethan's script.
Oh wow! Was he on set?
No, he was only on set for a few days because he came.
Was he allowed on set?
He came. Well, I would have loved to have had him there, but he was working on I forget what TV show he was on, but he acted in the movie, so he came out to do his part and. You know, but no, it would have been great if he had been on set. I don't think, except for working on certain movies where the writer also directed, for the most part. Well, on Offer and Compromise, the movie with I just did with Valerie Landsberg, our writer was on set probably 50-60% of the time.
Was that on Offer and Compromise? Was that his first produced script?
Yeah.
Now, what was a big difference between, say, working with somebody with their first time production and Ethan, who, you know, had written stuff before?
Well, I think for Dylan, you know, one of the things that I've tried to figure out over the years, because when you make an indie movie and you only have a limited amount of resources and dollars to spend, how can you, because inevitably, no matter what happens, you end up with 20, 30 minutes on the cutting room floor. And at the indie level, you know, sometimes full scenes go and you're just like, oh God, you know, we could have gotten that one location, or we maybe could have, you know, had an extra day of shooting or something. So with Dylan, and you know, so just to back up a second. So one of the things that I think is so important and isn't done, because we really never have the money to do it, is to try and bring on your editor a week or two before you start shooting. And as your director works with their DP and works with the production designer and works with their costume designer, have them work with the editor and really go through the script and, you know, say, what would be the first scene? You know, what scenes in this script are not going to make the movie? And a good editor, experienced editor, should know that. So to work with them, or even talk to them about certain scenes and how you're going to shoot that scene, so you can try to figure out, instead of shooting every angle from top to bottom, maybe, you know, save time. So, you know, I tried to impress upon Dylan, which was really great about, was, and Val, what in the script really probably won't make the movie, right? So Dylan did a lot of writing. This movie it was an interesting process, because the movie started out more kind of as a black comedy, but it's really sort of took more in the editing, which, by the way, the editing is really the final rewrite, right? So in the editing,
we're written three times, right?
Yeah.
The script in production and in post.
Yeah. So the movie is much more of a drama with some comedic elements, because it is dark, and if you don't laugh, you want to shoot yourself. So, but you know, so there was just sort of this process of, as we were shooting and seeing things, Dylan was able to, and with Offer and Compromise, it takes place. Basically, the premise of this is, you know, it's a husband, father of three small kids, loses his job, doesn't tell his wife, he's lost his job. Simultaneously, young kid out of college gets his first job at a credit collection agency and is assigned their file. So you have these two different worlds. And we didn't shoot the credit collection agency. It was almost like two completely different movies, because nobody from the first part of the family was there for the BCC, and except for the kid who goes to the family's home, he was the only person, this actor was the only person that overlapped into both. So as we saw dailies and saw how the family was shaping up, it could shape how the credit collection agency, so there was some rewriting that was done for that to fit in.
Now, through all the projects that you have worked on through the years, do you think there's some through line through them all?
Yeah, I think, you know, like with No Pay Nudity, Gabriel's character is miserable, and throughout the course of the movie, he's shown that his life isn't really as bad as he thought it was. So there's some, and I'm also very drawn to it. I love coming of age stories. And this movie, somebody said, I forget who coined it, but it was absolutely perfect. This is a middle-aged coming-of-age story. So, yeah, I think coming-of-age stories I'm very drawn to, and seeing that journey. And most of the films I've produced have something that's hopeful in the end, even offering compromise, even though it's a tough journey, what the family goes through once the wife finds out that she, you know, that she's been lied to, right? And everything that brings up, and then getting to the point where they're going to figure this out, right? So there's a ray of hope that things are going to get better.
Well, great. And I can't look forward, or I look forward to seeing it.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you sitting down and talking with me today.
Listen, thank you so much. I mean, at the indie level, any press or publicity we can get to let people know that there's a film out there, we'll take.
And we're happy to do it.
Yeah. So, listen, CineStory is one of the bright spots of my career. I love this organization. And I love that it's so affirming and creative for writers, and a place where they really, you know, every year when I participate as a mentor at CineStory, I feel like I get as much out of it as the writers.
We'd love to hear that.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.